Hello, friends. Welcome to the Logistics of Logistics podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. Thank you so much for joining us today. On the Logistics of Logistics, I talk to experts in logistics and transportation, warehousing, fulfillment, supply chain, and of course, technology. And during these interviews, I'm always the one asking the dumb questions. I ask the dumb questions so you don't have to. Today's topic is Level Up, Freight Tech for SMB Brokers with my friend Andy Tomka. SMB means small, medium business brokers. Andy is the vice president of product at Movement, a Chicago-based TMS firm that is developing technology to meet the needs of smaller brokerages, giving them access to features typically only available to large enterprises. By the way, Movement is spelled M-V-M-N-T. Check the show notes. If you want to learn more about transportation management systems, please take a listen to this episode. How's it going, Andy?
It's going great, Joe. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you about this. So Andy, please introduce yourself and your company and where you're calling from today.
My name is Andy Tomka. I am originally from Iowa, but I've been in the Chicago area for about 16 plus years. And that's where I'm calling in from today, is Chicago, right in the heart of the city.
And what's the name of your company?
My company is Movement, the Movement Group. MVMNT Movement. We are, like you introduced us, a TMS for small and mid-sized brokers in the tech brokerage space.
Very nice. Very nice. So when we say SMB, we mean small, medium brokers or small, medium business in this case, SMB brokers. And you were introduced to me by Courtney from Manifest. So I will see you at Manifest. And I'm hoping this airs before Manifest, but if it does, get your tickets to Manifest. Everyone's going to be there. All the cool kids will be there. Andy and I will be there. So you guys, I think, are making a big announcement there.
Yeah, we'll be demoing at the innovation stage and our booth number is 413. I think I got that
right. Yeah, it'll be easy to find you among the 4,500 people there.
Yeah, please stop by. Introduce yourself.
Anyway, Andy, tell us a little bit about Movement. How old is the company and is your focus on SMB? Please explain.
Yeah, so the company is about 2.5 years old. It's gone through a couple iterations. It originally started out as a freight brokerage, and then the founder, as a young brokerage, was struggling to keep the finances afloat. And then he started to develop some technology, and that technology he sold to some large shippers. And then for a while, the company dabbled a little bit in like marketplace technology, which was having its hot moment. And then I joined in the summer of 22. And when I got there, I showed them the future about how they were just going to either end up becoming a broker or they either had to pick to become a technology
provider. Well, that is a real challenge for companies. And again, I think it's a good problem to have when you're good at tech and good at brokerage or have a foot in each camp, but you can't keep a foot in both camps for very long unless you're a massive company. And even the massive companies, the challenge they have is who wants to buy the technology of their competitor, right? So you have to choose. And you guys chose wisely, I think, which is focusing on the SMB brokers. And I know before we hit record, we were talking about a lot of things. We'll get in more detail in a minute, but just the idea that if you're a small broker, you still want all of the efficiency and all the effectiveness that goes with the very best freight technology, the very best TMS. And it doesn't have to cost you your business. And again, I think it doesn't have to be, you got to be a certain size to have a TMS. You have to have certain size, but you don't have to have a fortune to get in a TMS these days.
No, you don't. The cost of technology in all of the things we use in life is reducing and is getting more and more cost effective. And a TMS was right on track to become more cost effective to buy and to implement a brokerage. Yes, that's definitely true.
Andy, tell us a little bit about you. Where'd you grow up? Oh, you already told us you grew up in Iowa, but where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Some career highlights before you joined Movement.
So I grew up in Des Moines, Iowa, but I like to think of myself as a product of farming and farming communities. Both my parents came from family farms, and I spent a lot of my summers and a lot of my formative years around agriculture.
Easy work.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of early mornings, A lot of dirty work. Yes. I spent a lot of time around agriculture, I still have uncles that are farmers and cousins that are all still running the family farm. So I grew up in Iowa. I went to Iowa State University. And the week before school started at Iowa State, somebody was asking me what my major was going to be. And I said, I'm going to get into supply chain management. I'm going to get into that. And they're like, why would you get into that? And I was like, well, my uncle tells me the middleman makes all the money. And I had actually misheard him. He was complaining about seed companies that had the monopoly on the seed that they sold to farmers. And so he was frustrated that middleman was making all the money. And I got there. I was like, this supply chain sounds like the middleman. So I like to ask people if they got into logistics intentionally or by accident.
Mostly accident.
I feel like even though it was intentional, it was by accident though. So I saw it all the way through. I didn't quit. Once I found out what supply chain was. During college, I worked in import-export for Pioneer Seed Corn, getting stuff to Brazil and back from Brazil and into Puerto Rico and out of Puerto Rico. So I did a lot of early logistics in freight forwarding and supply chain. And then I also worked for a trucking company. I worked for a trucking company out of Omaha, Nebraska, a great experience at Hill Brothers Transportation. I started there with somebody, Liz Wayne, who has been an advisor in some leadership positions at TI. And I got to know her started her career, and she got to know me as an intern. So I dispatched trucks for a while. I worked in freight brokerage for a while. And then I graduated from Iowa State and I got a job in what I thought was Chicago, but was actually Aurora, Illinois, which is a little bit outside for a young 23-year-old, was a misstep at Menlo Logistics. Great company. It was a 3PL. They had Unilever. I started working on the Unilever account, managing routing guides for SlimFast.
Did they get bought by Conway?
They had just been bought by Conway right before I started working there.
And then Conway got bought by XPO.
I worked there for a year and a half, and I could not take living in the suburbs for very much longer, being the single guy that I was. And somebody told me about this company, Echo Global Logistics, who was interviewing people. And they're like, if you're going to move into the city, really young company, they're looking for people. And I got an interview right away. And it was less than 6 blocks away from where I was going to move in the city. So I was like, this is too good to be true.
Close to the bar, close to work, everything's good.
Right up my alley. And so I started right after Doug Wagner. I think I was like the 60th person hired there. It was just a company that was growing and growing very quickly. And we were trying to create competitive technology that nobody had ever been able to build at that point. So that was the early story of me and my journey starting out.
So when and why did you join Movement?
So I spent the next 15 years at Echo. We started building LTL technology, and then we were getting into truckload. And I had developed an expertise on the integration side, where I worked with to build out the early systems that Echo ran its EDI technology on, and then its APIs. And then what I got into after that period of time was just the command integration, the command acquisition was a big part of my story, in that we were trying to meld these two $500 million brokers together. And so I spent a lot of time up in Skokie with the command team as we were like assembling how these two companies would become one. So I had experience with that. And then after that period of time, the Echo IT leadership and the leadership at the company said, hey, Andy, we want to replatform our optimizer system. This technology is now 10 plus years old. We just got through this big command integration, and the command people have really highlighted a lot of like structural problems with the TMS. So what would we do? What would we build? And that started me on a 3-year process of just creating what Echo is going to become and what
it's the next generation of technology. And I think that's the nature of what we've been going through, not just in logistics and supply chain, but the whole world. When you think about the technologies that we use 20 years ago, by the way, I used tech in automotive in the 90s and even the 80s, that before the internet. And we were connected, but there was no internet. And there were servers in the building and all the kind of stuff that we look at is so backwards now. But each generation builds on the last.
Were you on AS400 systems? That was
I was on the CAD system, so it was a four prime. I forgot PDGS. I think it was something Ford created. Then it'd be like the equivalent of CATIA.
When I first started at Hill Brothers, we were dispatching trucks in an IBM AS400 system.
Right. I remember the mainframes made the building really hot, so we basically sat in refrigerators all night long. So that was what it was like being there. They're like, we have to stay in the cold. The mainframes need this cold. You're like, yeah, but I'm sitting here for 10 hours a night in the cold.
The company paid a guy just to sit there and watch the Today Show, just to make sure the servers never went down.
Right. So getting back to it, you started that was that your last project at Echo, is developing that, like that next generation of tech?
Yeah, their first generation was Echo Optimizer, and their next generation is the Echo Accelerator project.
Yeah, and by the way, I believe I talked to Doug Wagner, and I think he had quite a big hand in the first generation. And Echo is, during that time, was an absolute rocket ship. I can't believe how fast it grew. I think Doug Wagner came when it was 60 or 70 million in sales, and now
I think it might have been less than that. I think it might have been 35 million.
Yep. So it was, that's still a lot of money. Most brokers are like, I'd take that. And then I think now they're 3-4 billion a year. So absolute rocket ship that you were on.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. It was a good young formative years in the industry.
So when and why did you join Movement?
I got to the end of that process, and as we were laying out how we would implement it, I just started looking around. I felt like I had not a master's degree in how to build technology, but a PhD in it. Like I was like, I was on that rocket ship. I know how these companies need to build up, and I know a lot about this industry. What else could I do with it? And what I found at Movement was a young company looking for a lot of direction and looking to make some critical decisions about how its future would be in play. And it felt a lot like how I was assessing Echo back in 2006. Yeah,
it's exciting to launch a product, but then right after, I'm an automotive guy originally, and I remember when we would launch a product as an engineer, you're like, oh, you bit the plant, you finally launch it, and there'd be this satisfaction. But then when the high of launching goes away, which you worked for years, all of a sudden the reality is, I'm now going to be working on the small quality issues that we missed along the way. And I'm not saying it's work that has to be done, but it feels very small compared to launching a car. And so you find a lot of times the experienced guys are like, I got to be transferred off this project, or I have to move to another company because it doesn't feel right. And a lot of junior guys go, hey, this is great. I get to work on these quality fixes. It seems relevant. But I can imagine you probably felt that way after you launched that new product. You're like, now what? You're like, everything's going to be small. That's the challenge. That's the challenge big companies have, keeping good people.
So I found Movement. Movement found me. And in June of 2022, I joined, and I just set them out on a kind of a course. There's a bunch of critical business decisions that needed to be made, and helping guide the company through that was a big part of the early days at Movement. But we've really spent the past year, since January of 23, just on our own internal rocket ship, building the core parts of our business and what the TMS is going to be for our small and mid-sized brokers.
And you already have people using it. It's not that launch. You're already launched. So I won't even get any impression not. So before we hit record, I wrote a whole bunch of things down that I want to talk to you about. So one of the first things I want to talk to you about is, you talked a lot before we hit record about managing complexity and the nature of what a TMS needs to be for a user. And it was around two things, the shipper and the carrier. Please elaborate.
So what brokers are often challenged by is they need to be a reflection of what the shipper has asked them to do. And they need to impress upon the carrier, the person that's going to execute, what section of that impression they need the carrier to do. So where brokerage technology really struggles is the false transactions that are created. Every broker has this story. It's almost universal. As I've gone and met with brokers over the past year, they're like, it's terrible. Every time we have to lease a trailer or warehouse something in transit or solve some sort of labor problem, we have to build these false transactions in our TMS. And those false transactions, we have to tuck in operationally into how that shipper wants it to come back to them on an invoice or come back to them on a tracking update. And so from day one, I sat down and I was like, this is all true across the board. So how does a brokerage tech, how does Movement answer that complex request from the shipper and make it look like it's just a walk in the park? It's really easy for me to add that additional insurance. It's really easy for me to solve this lumper problem. From day one, from an architecture standpoint, there's this principle that Amazon talks about. It's called one-way doors and two-way doors. And a one-way door decision at a company is something that you walk through and you can't go back through. And a two-way door is something that you can come and go. So we made a one-way door decision really early on, where what we were going to do is architect the brokerage software from the ground up so that any challenge that the shipper might show up to the broker with is very easy to solve. And then we also put a further constraint on ourselves that architecture can't get in the way of the common A to B, one truck, one shipper transaction. So it sits in the background if you need it, but if you don't need it and you're just doing regular line haul spot freight, it works perfectly well. Now, what's the benefit to this architecture? What's the payoff? As you're going to look at your line haul, you're going to look at your historicals, you're going to look at your commission, you have a much more accurate picture of your true costs and the effort that went into building that transaction in your system. So your operational overhead at the brokerage, which is a hard number to nail down, becomes a lot easier to do when you have this architecture as an asset rather than trying to fight it. Does that make sense, Joe?
No, it totally does. And I think I mentioned to you when we talked once before is that I remember doing that where the software I was using, which was mostly for over the road, we had to put in some ocean freight stuff. I understand that wasn't the software's fault. It was the nature of our business, though. We occasionally had to do some ocean freight. So we had to somehow wedge ourselves into it. And it is a challenge. And I think also, and this leads me into the next discussion I want to talk about, which is this managing complexity. I complained to you about this earlier. And I won't mention the software. It's not a TMS. It's a separate software that I always use the software. And then it got more and more sophisticated. But as it became more sophisticated, you go, doesn't that make you happy, Joe, that the software you know and love is getting better? It got harder and harder to use. So I felt like I used to use this without even a second thought. And then it got so complex that I felt like I couldn't use it. And then I noticed people on LinkedIn saying, does anyone know someone who can help me with blank? And I was thinking, I started using it for ease of use. I loved how easy it was. It was like I was levering technology to do so much more. And then all of a sudden it was like, now technology is way more sophisticated and probably in the hands of a super user, it is fantastic. But for the rest of us, our life is ruined when it comes to this tech.
Yeah, this is what I'm getting out of this call is you're serving as a good reminder of what I as a product leader need to be mindful of. And that is that you do want to take customer feedback in. You want to understand what the customer needs are. But if you're not careful and you listen to them a little too closely, the next customer comes along and they don't operate their business in that same way. And they're like, why do I have this drop down here? It's because this one customer has this special piece of equipment and this special. So you got to have an agnostic approach.
I think all you product leaders, product managers, innovation leaders are always in the same trick bag, which is I want something simple and elegant and user-friendly where I don't have to train people for 2 days to create a transaction. But I also want it to be powerful on the other end and be able to do so many great things. And I'm thinking about AI here. We're getting ahead of myself. But that's the balance you always have to have. And I've heard people talk about this, tech people on my podcast. They go, the consternation and debate about adding one button, one drop down in our company is huge, because if it adds value, great. Does it confuse? Not great.
There's a balance. You can't. Well, they're our biggest customer. We got to do it for them. What's this going to do to the next customer?
Right. I've seen more and more of the way you guys are doing it with just, I can turn stuff off and I can turn stuff on. So if you're a very basic user, you use a very basic system. If you need another field or two turned on, I'll turn those on for you, but they don't have to be on. And this, a bigger point I think we should make here is, you said to me before we record is, you worked with one of the largest freight brokerages out there, Echo. They're a legend, what they've done, what Doug Wagner and his team and what you were part of it has changed the industry. And when I talked to Doug Wagner, I think it was last Christmas, it was amazing what they're doing with technology. I'll put a link in the show notes to it so people can take a listen. I was very impressed with all the things they're doing. And I think sometimes we think they're a freight broker. The bigger freight brokers are spending a lot of money on technology to do great things. But your feeling was, we're going to work with the small, medium brokers, and they can have maybe not every last feature that they have over at Echo, but they can have enough technology that they can compete with the big guys without the big guy budget. So please explain.
Yeah. So I also want to add that I don't think the bar is as high as everybody thinks it is. And what I mean by that is that a lot of the early influences at Echo were like how other TMSs did things, right? And we took a lot of influences from people that were like a carrier TMS. I mean, this is early 2000s technology. And that's how we architected a lot of core parts of the transaction. And now today, what I know to be true is that what we had to do was actually build like something that could meet shippers where they needed to be met and instruct carriers how they needed to be instructed. And the technology had to be complementary of that restriction. What we opened this call or we opened this interview with, technology's getting cheaper, but also the professionalization within this industry has gotten a lot better. I've gotten a lot better, right? That's got to be a net benefit for anybody listening or anybody making a tech decision is, okay, what good is 15 years of building freight tech worth? It's that if you're a broker, you have all these unique challenges, and those unique challenges are a way to differentiate yourself to a shipper, to solve a problem for a shipper and to solve it repeatedly where other brokers are not is a good way to never have a problem when the RFP bid cycle has reengaged itself, right? Like, I'm not going to kick Andy's brokerage out. I'm not going to kick Tomka brokerage out because he can just solve that Dallas to Chicago lane and we don't have any problems. And that customer that we go into in Q1 with 25 truckloads is so happy. What does that broker have to do to make that experience? It could be that they're making no margin, right? Because they can't manage the overhead. And a lot of brokers, unfortunately, look at some of those situations and they say, it's time to move on from this. Especially today, where margins are really bad and the freight market's been under the weather for, I don't know, 8-9 months, right?
It feels longer than that. But we're talking right now on January 19th, Friday. I think a lot of people believe in the second or third quarter, we will see brighter days for this industry. And I'm hoping that's the case for everybody's sake. But getting back to it, you make a software, again, for small and medium-sized brokers that hopefully has, you said, the right amount of technology, and you're not saying it doesn't necessarily, as you said, the bar is not as high as a lot of us think, but it's the right technology. And there's a lot of transportation management systems out there. And I think it's important to take a look at what's out there, because we have a lot of new entrants. And my sense is always that we're going to have segments, and there's going to be the right software for everybody. And I think there's a huge market. And I think I'm so used to talking to technologists like you that you get the impression everybody's got this killer technology that they're using. And then when I talk to carriers, shippers, brokers, some aren't using anything. And you go, oh, you're using Excel spreadsheets. What? So there's this sense that everybody's high tech. And I think that's probably a lie. And again, I'm part of the lie because I interview only people who are using great tech, like the stuff you're creating. But again, I do get calls from warehousing companies and small brokers who don't have any technology. It's crazy.
Yeah, you can get by. You can get by. And I've certainly met with people that have a Google spreadsheet and are running AppScript in the background to move it between tabs as the order lifecycle progresses. There's a way to get by, but it does have its limits. You know,
not going to scale that way.
And there's a segment of this market that does have a lot of aspirational requests. They might not have an EDI customer just yet, but they want to know from me, like, how are we going to do an EDI integration for them if that arises? You got as a tech company, you got to have answers to that.
Yep. And I think my friend Kevin Hill over at Brush Pass Research, I think he says there's 27,000 or something brokers. And I think the top 1,500, top 1,200 have 80% of the business. He posted something like that the other day on LinkedIn. And one of the things I talked to him about when he was on the podcast was, beyond those carriers, a lot of we would recognize a lot of those names. Echo would clearly be in that group. But there's also increasingly we see carriers say, we're going to open up a brokerage. And I would say those are some very good brokerages. And then you look and go, that's another 25,000 carriers who aren't on that. And I think Kevin used a second term, which was growth cap. The guy's kind of not super small, but in that growth cap area. And they're serving major corporations and doing, I always say, it might be the best business around, because you can grow very wealthy running one of those brokerages. No one knows the name of your customers because they're not real well known in every case. And no one knows the name of your company. And there's a lot of companies making good money, and I think they're going to have to compete with the big boys, and they're going to have to do it without the big boy tech. And again, I think what you're creating is saying, hey, this lets you compete at that level. You can be just as efficient. You can drive to the same unit economic costs as the big guys using movement, and that's a wonderful thing. That's what we all need to get to.
Yeah, that's really getting at the heart of that this industry is a relationship-based business. Those shippers that are working with those mid-caps, they like that they can call somebody anytime. There's a lot that's been written recently about how grueling this industry is, and it is grueling. FreightWaves just published an article about it. Freight Caviar has been on it. It's a tough industry to work in, and part of the reason it's tough is in order to differentiate yourself is you don't want them to call anybody else to solve this problem.
I agree.
And that is at the heart of what I do, is technology needs to meet that constraint in the industry.
Yep. And while we're talking about newer tech like yours, one of the things I like about all the new TMS like movement is you connect to all the killer apps. And I call Green Screens and Project 44, Four Kites, Descartes, MacroPoint, all, who am I missing? I was just talking to Highway. You can, all those apps easily plug into your system, which is a big benefit of the newer technology companies. And I know the older ones probably have the capability to plug in, but they're on the technology and they're the older technology. I don't always talk to those guys, but I know it's a little harder to integrate because they don't necessarily connect to all the cool APIs that you guys get.
That is the advantage to being young, is that we don't have a lot of the legacy constraints in our tech stack, where it restricts our ability to architect and build external facing APIs or internal facing APIs. It's easier for us to spin that up. Yeah, we're just getting started with our integration partnerships. Our first early integration partnerships were with Carrier Details for FMCSA information. Big fan of that company. Kevin Hill is a big fan of that company, working with Truckstop, working with another of the sister companies of Carrier Details, Load Board Network, to get more coverage into the posting marketplaces. Descartes, PC Miler, just getting started with that.
You get a new customer and they say, I need it, you'll get it in.
Right. Table stakes integrations like QuickBooks, those things are all things that are where we're starting. And as we're going to be expanding into some of those that you just mentioned.
Yep. And I won't mention the name of the company, but a company that I talked to, this goes back years ago, a tech company founder, TMS founder, said, yeah, Joe, the way my technology is going to work is you'll be able to plug in all these other systems. And I was like, huh? And I was thinking, what in the world is he talking about? But it was like, he seemed to really notice. He was positive this is the way the market was going. And I was like, I have no idea why I would want to plug into. I was like, you mean to the shipper's ERP system? He goes, yeah, that too. But all these other systems. I'm like, what other systems? Because I didn't know of any. That wasn't what we did back then. The TMS was the silver bullet that was going to solve all our problems. And he knew, and I guess you knew, that the silver bullet didn't quite kill the monster. So we need to add some other apps. And I think the farther along we get, the more we realize the TMS, super important. It's probably the most important, but it's the center of your tech stack. It's not the only thing you need.
Right. It's a critical system of record, which we have to do really well. And that's got to be our focus, is how we execute on that. But we can't do it all. And those relationships are going to become really important to us.
Yeah, it reminds me, I use this analogy all the time. It's like WordPress. So if anyone looks, I think 30% of the internet is WordPress sites. WordPress is the framework. But if you need a calendar, you don't have to code a calendar in WordPress. You just get a plugin from one of 20 calendar apps that they've approved and they've integrated to. And that's the same for accounting, for adding a shop, for like they have hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of plugins that integrate easily. And why we trust WordPress? Because they manage that seamlessly. And they vet all of those tools to make sure we're not going to when somebody calls you and says, hey, Andy, I want to plug in and I got this and this. You're like, let me see. Let's make sure this isn't sketchy because I'm not going to connect you to my customers. Because basically you're giving the movement seal of approval if you get an integration.
Your reputation's on the line. So yeah, we do have to be a little bit of a gatekeeper as well. You're right, Joe.
Yep. So I want to talk about, before we hit record, we were talking about an article you just wrote for Freight Caviar, my friend over there at PBJ, Paul. I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. Jaralewski? I forgot, whatever it is.
Please don't test me.
PBJ, that's it, over at Freight Caviar. But you wrote an article and it was called Good Broker, Great Broker, Amazing Broker. Please give us the breakdown of what that article is about. And by the way, I will make sure, if you give me the link to that, I'll make sure I put a link in the show notes. So what were you getting at in that article?
Yeah, so the article was basically, it's a story of the progression of really the past 20 years of my career. And it starts with kind of the level of ambition that we had at the first brokerage I worked at, Hill Brothers. It was the level of ambition that we had at Menlo, and it was the level of ambition that we had early on at Echo, which was like, we just got to get into the shipper and we got to service what we know about that shipper really well. And the better we do that, we'll be a great broker. We'll be a great partner for them, right? As time has gone on, that's pretty common. Professionalization of this industry, people are really good at understanding like, just what their lanes are, where they're good, and trying to best do that. That's the industry table stakes. We're moving into a period of time where in order to really differentiate yourself to that shipper, and we talked about this a little bit before, is you got to say to them, what's the hardest lane you run? Let me show you how I can run that lane for you. That's a great broker. Finding that lane and showing how you can demonstrate value, how your network is, you trust your network, and that you'll go to great lengths to lock in that customer and get that, build that critical customer trust. That's where we are today. And then the last part of the article is where I think we're going, which is a brokerage more as a partner and a brokerage as an advisor to the shipper, where it's not what's the hardest lane that you have to run, but what's the supply chain challenge that you're faced with. I am 10 years experienced. I'm 5 years experienced in this industry. Let me take a shot at that tough challenge for you. Is it that you're paying a lot for your LTL and you're trying to investigate how you could not pay so much for LTL? You wanted a consolidation program, but you can't quite figure out how to do it. Is it you've got a little bit of small parcel and you want to evaluate how to run small parcel better? These are the qualities that are an amazing broker, is somebody that comes to the shipper and says, don't give me just your lanes that you want. Don't give me the lanes that are troubling you. Give me all that, but also tell me a little bit about where you're struggling as a business to meet your customers' needs.
Yep. I like that. I like it. And it occurs to me every time I've had this conversation with people is, if you go see the doctor and the doctor says, Andy, this isn't in my area of specialization, I want to refer you to so-and-so. They don't say, I'm going to try. I'll do the best I can on this, Andy, but look, I'm not a foot doctor, but I'll give it a shot. No, you're like, doctors don't do that. They're professionals. They say, I'm good at this and this. And I think we have to get to the place of professionalism where people stop saying, I sell everything to everyone. If you don't do cold chain, don't say, we'll give it a shot. And by the way, shippers, you should also say, you're not learning on my dime, right? Yeah, I don't know where you're going to learn, but you're not going to learn here. We have to get to a place of alignment also, which is, I won't mention the name, but somebody said on my podcast one time, the very successful freight brokerage owner said, we had a shipper walking through the building and one of the guys ran over and started ringing the bell. Why you ring the bell? Because he made $1,000 on the load. That's not alignment. That's not what shippers want. So can imagine being in the building, you and I are considering a brokerage, Andy, and so you go, hey, what's the bell? Oh, that guy just made $1,000 on your, oh, not on your load, somebody else's load. You'd be like, whoa, how is that alignment? That is a lose-win transaction there. And what we got to get to is a place where we stop looking and saying, how much can we make on this? But saying, guys, this is, we're going to tell you exactly what our cost is on these loads. And here's our management fee. I really do think we're heading more and more to that management fee because especially large shippers, they're going to owe an explanation to the boss. Where is the market going? And when someone, our cost went up 10%. Is that because the 3PL raised their price or because the market actually went up 10%? We need to have that. That's, and again, to me, that's alignment that I want. That's what I get from my financial planner. I know what my financial planner makes every year, right? And he's happy to share that. And he says, Joe, the more you make, the more I make.
There's a lot of pressures in the industry, economic pressures, competitive pressures, and a raised bar with the industry becoming a lot more professional than it was 20 years ago when I first started.
Yep. And I would also say people like you have helped us elevate people who used to do a lot of clerk work where they're taking information and entering it manually. Now, all of a sudden, Andy says, now we're going to turn those people into data analysts who can be consultative and say, guys, if you got me that information on Wednesday rather than Thursday, I could have saved you 15%. That's the kind of thing we need to get our consultants working on and not clerk work, which is, yep, I take it off a spreadsheet and I cut copy paste into a DMS.
I know this is the back half of the podcast, but the way I talk about it is you, the broker manager, you, the broker owner, have to be talking internally, like, how do we take this person with 1 year experience, that kind of clerk or that person that has a limited but not little logistics information, and make them look like a 3 year rep? Make a 3 year rep look like a 7 year rep. And everybody that's listening knows the difference between a 1, a 3, and a 7, right? Those 7 year reps have this Rain Man like quality where they're like, Dallas to Chicago per skid rate is $205. They're like, full truckload, $1,800. They're like, what? Do you have sports stats up there? What are you memorizing? So how do you do that as a broker? You got to, technology, that's where technology needs to meet you. That's what your expectation should be, in addition to a lot of other things.
Yep. I think we've covered a lot. I want to summarize some of this, and then I want to get your final thoughts. First off, I'll see you at Manifest, and you're speaking at Manifest, right?
I'll be at the innovation stage early Tuesday morning.
Okay. And what are you talking about?
We're doing a product launch for out of what Movement has recently.
The latest product launch. All right. By the way, I got an email from Courtney over at Manifest, and you were one of a few people she said you should talk to who's going to be presenting. That's how we met. So again, I'm talking to Andy Tomka. We're talking about Freight Tech for SMB brokers. We've covered a lot of ground. So first off, I'll see you at Manifest. Secondly, we just talked about managing complexity, and that quickly gets into ease of use and sophistication. You want all the sophistication that you need, but not extra sophistication that makes it difficult to use. I still want the ease of use. Boy, I'm a picky customer. I want super sophistication, but I want it to be easy. We also talked about connecting to killer apps and the importance of the technology being at the right level for the broker. And again, you can compete at a very high level with the technology. You don't have to spend $1 billion to be competitive in this business. We also talked about good broker, great broker, amazing broker. I'll put a link to that article if you share it with me. And before I forget, I will put a link to your LinkedIn profile, a link to your website, and any other links you give me, I will put those in the show notes. Put a big bow on this one, Andy Tomka. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts. As we come out of this doldrum, which we are going to come out of, we're at a critical point, I think, where if you've been looking for how to take your brokerage into a true brokerage elevation, Movement should be a part of that mix. Like I said, this experience that I've had building up a tech at a great brokerage, and this experience of architecting what that broker's next generation of software is going to be, has to be worth something. And I hope it's worth something to the small and mid-sized brokers out there that have great relationships. I talked about the great relationships. Have great relationships and want to differentiate themselves, continue to differentiate themselves to their shippers and grow new shippers.
So if somebody calls and says, Andy, I heard you on Joe's podcast, I want this. How long does it take them to get up to speed using your systems?
Days, like a day. It's a cloud managed TMS. It doesn't.
That's crazy.
It's multi-tenant. We spin them up in hours. We just got to certify your email so that you can quickly start sending BOLs and rate cons and invoices out of the TMSs. That's the hardest part about the journey.
Yep.
Is just getting that email.
It used to be the technology companies where every implementation, every integration felt like we've never done it before. But now it seems as if, and whenever I ask somebody that, they're like, we can move as fast as you can.
Yeah, that was when I was at Echo. That was our goal of EDI. EDI had always been struggling with, like, you had to meet the customer spec and then your spec and then test files. And a big goal of mine was just to, let's always be we're on standby mode. Let's always just be ready for anybody that's going to show up and want to integrate. And that's got to be true for software and implementation of software.
Yep. So one more time, who's your sweet spot over there at Movement, and what problems are you solving for them?
Brokers up to about 50 people, 60 people, a great spot, 60 people and under, great spot that we've really focused on starting our company.
Great. Great. And what problems you solve them for them typically? What's the problem that they call and go, I'm dying. Can you solve this for me?
Our approach is that it's end to end. So like we actually have a CRM in our TMS that is native to the TMS. So what we wanted to do was be disruptive to the deal flow, the traditional deal flow in brokerage, which is like the average tenure of a rep is 2.5 years. And a lot of the shippers are transactional in nature. So by the time you build a relationship, maybe the rep has left, or maybe that shipper just doesn't need your services. In a lot of TMSs that I've worked with, a lot of people that I've interviewed, they're like, yeah, it's the same customer record 15 times because we keep putting them back in the CRM and then we keep putting them back in the TMS. So it starts at that point is we wanted to break that flow where if you're working with shippers and they're transactional in nature, that they're always in your system and you're always able to see how they ship and make decisions based off there. So that's where the TMS starts. And then all the way through to the accounting and integrations, managing the booking process, the complication that I mentioned, the being able to do that very easily all the way through to your invoicing and accounting processes.
It's funny when we look at all of our cool new technology, whatever we're doing, whatever you're using today, we know that in 3 years, 5 years, you'll look back and go, oh my God, can you believe that's what we struggled by with? That was all we had. And it was good enough. We seemed to get by. I just got a new mobile phone and I got a new laptop. And I was thinking, yeah, every time you get a new phone, every time you get a new laptop, you're like, damn, didn't know that was possible. And it's the same with our TMS. So stay tuned. Anyway, I will put a link to your LinkedIn profile, link to your website, and any other links you and your marketing team share with me. And Andy, it was a pleasure talking to you. I look forward to seeing you at Manifest. What other conferences will we see you at?
You will see me at the Carrier Broker Summit in Kansas City.
Yep.
Big fan of that Dan Lindsay's conference that he's putting together.
I'm going to have him on the podcast again to talk about that. And that's in April, a few weeks after TIA, which is out in Phoenix this year.
I should have said, I will be at TIA. I'll be at TIA. I was going to say TIA next. I meant to say TIA first. So I'll be at TIA and in Scottsdale. And then I'm excited about the Carrier Broker Summit. It's a great conference. Carrier Broker Summit is a good conference too.
Yeah. So it is cold and gray in Detroit and Chicago in February. So it's good to be in Vegas. And then it's still cold and gray in Detroit and Chicago in April. So we'll be at TIA in Phoenix. And I don't know what Kansas City is, but it's got to be warmer and less gray than Detroit and Chicago.
I think about Kansas City in April, like I think about Chicago in, I don't know, May. It's got to be warm.
A little ahead of the curve. So we will see you there. So if people want to reach out and see you guys, they'll see you at any of the conferences they go to, or they can reach out, touch you on LinkedIn or on your website. Andy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah, I really appreciate this, Joe, and we'll be talking to you soon. Can't wait to hang out at Manifest.
Yes, exactly. And thank all of you for listening to my podcast. Your support's very much appreciated. Until next time, onward and upward.
You have been listening to the Logistics of Logistics podcast, where we engage with leaders in the logistics and supply chain community. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, hit the like button, and leave us a nice review on Apple or Spotify or wherever else you listen. Also, please check out our videos on YouTube and connect with us on LinkedIn. We're very big on LinkedIn. And you can also reach us on the logisticsoflogistics.com, our website.